Good morning to everyone. A few small announcements first. One is that with this lockdown, the teaching has had an opportunity to spread far and wide. And we are now looking for some assistance, as there are quite a few tasks related to the teaching. Simple tasks like checking the English subtitles of the videos, putting time codes for the videos, breaking them up into chapters. The same with the audio podcasts, titling them. And various other related tasks which will help make these audios and videos more accessible to everyone. So if you do feel you have the inclination and the commitment, and most importantly would enjoy helping to volunteer with this, we can put before you the various kinds of assistance we are looking for, and you can pick one which you feel you are best suited for. So if you would like to offer your time, then please write to the email ID info@gautamsachdeva.com and we will be in touch with you. The second announcement is that since the last Sunday talk, we had kept the room open after the talk is over in case you would like to interact with one another. Since it is the teaching that brings everyone together, then you are welcome to do so. Thirdly, there is a community of devotees of an Indian master called Shirdi Sai Baba. And this teaching has appealed to them tremendously. Many of you may know that I regularly give interviews, podcast interviews on the channel called Sai Baba's Devotee Speaks. And many have come through that channel to this channel. So for the sincere devotees of this great master's teachings, if any questions arise today, specifically related to his teachings, I would be happy to take them, or anything you may wish to share. And for those who are not familiar with his teaching, I would suggest an article, a short article I had written on Shirdi Sai Baba, which is on the website, which will make you familiar with the core of Advaita through his words as well as actions. Now, today I would like to go a bit deeper into the teachings, if you permit me. And let's explore this through some different perspectives. So for now, let's forget about our peace of mind. And let's see whether our relationships with others are giving them peace, or Are we antagonizing others by what we say and do? This is very important because it might bring to our awareness a lot of things we may or may not be aware of earlier. And this is especially true for those we love, because as the saying goes, we hurt those we love the most because we take their love for granted. So I'm going to read out two lines to you on this very matter. I live not as unto myself, as in the old days of my ignorance, but unto the great whole, so that nothing that I do, not the very slightest and the most insignificant act, shall disturb the peace of every living being. As simple as that. The weapons of us ordinary people are the words that come out from our mouths. Weapons of mass destruction, they have the tendency to undermine and destroy people's peace of mind. That is our power. Very powerful. I received an email a few days ago and similar emails in the past where people say they love the teaching. It makes total sense. But yet, they find that they are rude to other people. They say things they should not have said and they regret it. But they can't help it. We can't help hurting the others. We know it all now. We agree with it. We agree with what you say. But yet, we end up hurting others. And this is what we shall explore now. So please stay focused for a few minutes. You see, we invariably find that we say something and then later we regret it. That saying something is this hardwired reactivity against the other. It just comes out. Before it's too late, it's released from the mouth. And it appears that we have hurt the other. And why does that happen? Because we are afraid of our own survival. We hurt the other because we are afraid of our survival. There are four stages of speech. Para Pashyanti Madhyama Vekhari, which means from the source the thought emerges, takes shape, flowers as speech and is released from the tongue. And many of us are so hardwired by our conditioning of survival that the other has threatened our existence, that this process goes straight to the speech without thinking. like a rocket being launched, which we can call a reaction, not a response. So when it appears that we are hurting the other through our speech, we don't realize that we are hurting ourselves, because the illusion is so strong that it looks as if I have targeted another individual to hurt. But the more we do it, the more we are reinforcing our own battle to survive, to assert ourselves. This is me. This is who I am. This is what I will say. This is how I will say it. You see, it's all very well to say, I'm not the doer, and it is my conditioning which makes me say things. Of course. In fact, this is hardwired conditioning of survival, which is in all of us. But understanding, which is perhaps which begins with intellectual understanding and slowly sinks into the heart as living the understanding, brings to light the mechanics of the ego. Now, supposing you have the understanding that the words I say, although they appear to be hurting the other, are actually hurting myself. Supposing deep down you know it, there's no explanation required now. Oh, how is it that when I'm hurting the other, I'm hurting myself? That is all the mechanics of the mind. Supposing you are convinced that now I do believe when I'm hurting the other with my words, I'm hurting myself. Thereafter, you will think twice before hurting the other, because you are hurting yourself. It may still be an intellectual process initially, but when this understanding is lived, that nobody is the doer of their actions, your words most likely will not come from the ground of separation, because you are no longer protecting what is precious and dear to you. So if you find that there has been some change, no matter how small, once you have been exposed to this teaching, that's a beautiful recognition. If you find that aspects of your relationships have been transformed, while others are still the same as they used to be, that is a beautiful transformation. Because don't forget that you have years upon years of earlier conditioning, which is getting deconditioned. If you find that overall, you could say my relationships have been transformed by and large in their entirety, that is the seeking, being sincere, and the understanding taking deep roots. Now, if you find that nothing has changed, yet I understand this teaching intellectually and I love it, that is also beautiful, but a bit more sincerity and earnestness can help propel it further. Now, these attributes are also destined. What we are doing is just shining a light on them. That is why to some people, my teacher Rameshji would tell them, when they would say, we accept what you say intellectually, but we can't go beyond that. So he would say, all right, every evening, sit back for 15 minutes, that's all. And pick one thing during the course of the day which you feel is your action. And then investigate that. Is it really my action? I saw something, heard something, tasted something, touched something, smelled something. If I had not seen something, my action would not have happened. Therefore, is it really my action? So he would encourage people who were still not convinced or who had a grasp lighted to sit with this practice in the evenings till it sunk in deeper and deeper, and from their own experience of the events of the day, they could now conclude that, oh yes, this is so true. Now that sitting every evening is what is referred to, you could say, as earnest and sincerity. To take that time to reflect, to look back and see how this teaching operates. There was a very famous Nath yogi. Hats off to the Nath yogis, because no one could beat them at their sadhana, their practice. The story goes that Jalandhar Nath was walking on the road with a very focused intent. And another yogi was coming from the other direction. So he saw Jalandhar Nath looking very focused. He saw this yogi looking like blazing. And so he stopped Jalandhar Nath and he said, where are you going with such intensity? And Jalandhar Nath replied, I'm going to find my guru, to meet him. So the yogi told him, oh, have you not met your guru so far? He said, no, but I know his name and I've heard such beautiful things about him that I'm convinced he is my guru. So I'm going to find my guru. So the yogi told Jalandhar Nath, what is your guru's name? He said, my guru is the one and only Lord Gorakhnath. So the yogi looked at Jalandhar Nath and said, what do you want from Gorakhnath? He said, it's very simple. I want his grace. And the yogi looked at Jalandhar Nath and said, I am Gorakhnath. And so Jalandhar Nath was thrilled. And Gorakhnath told him, I have some errands to do. Stay here and I'll be back. Jalandhar Nath said, of course, master, I'll wait for you. And Gorakhnath returned after 12 years. And when he came back, he found Jalandhar Nath was still there, had set up his space, his small kutiya, his small hut, and was not only waiting for his master, but had attained full self-realization. That was the intensity that Jalandharnath had for the grace of Gorakhnath, that he did not flinch and move for 12 years from the spot where his guru told him to wait. 12 years. That is the sincerity. For many of us, it is a matter of convenience, these teachings, any spiritual teachings. The commitment sometimes is not there. As I said, even that is how it is meant to be. Those 12 years of waiting were 12 years of grace already operating. That was the sadhana. Not that when I come back, I will show you and teach you. It was quite funny in Nisargadatta Maharaj's satsangs. You see, Maharaj was into a lot of bhajan singing and cymbals and gongs because his guru had told him, don't ever leave this path. No matter the jnana yoga, singing devotional songs comes together. Now, what would happen is, when they were singing, sometimes Maharaj's voice would go very high. And all the people in the satsang, the Indians, the foreigners, when they would hear Maharaj singing very loudly certain lines, they would also raise their voices to the same pitch. And then after a few lines, it would come back down to the normal pitch. And one day, Maharaj told his devotees that at least think a little bit. The reason I am raising my voice for a few lines is to emphasize the message in those lines. But you are just raising your voice at the same time. I'm trying to drive home that point to you. So at least little bit, you know, don't just follow me blindly, but think, what are those lines I'm emphasizing? Why am I emphasizing them? You see, we are very fortunate that the teachers we have met in recent times are compassionate and they explain things like A for apple and B for banana. The rishis, the teachers, the masters of yore, there was very little that was said. Most was unsaid. And the student had to learn. So every relationship is an opportunity to learn. Every event in our lives is an opportunity to learn. There is one tremendous practice which takes a lot of courage. It's a very short practice, but it can be a turning point. Take all the worst things that have happened to you. Perhaps a business loss, a relationship that didn't work out, a health situation you had to face. Whatever you think has been a burden and a strain, and go to the window and look up. And say, thank you, Lord, for all this, because without it, I would not have learned the lessons that I had to learn. Thank God for all the troubles that have come your way. Because in that process, the ego is humbled. The ego offers itself that it took all these severe lessons for me to learn all that I learned. It's not an easy practice. It can hurt. But deep down, you know that there is truth in this. That is why in his earliest books, Rameshji would say, living the teachings is living the life courageous. It takes courage. It's so simple. It's so easy to blame someone, condemn someone. That is easy. But when this understanding comes in that sense, when you no longer can blame or condemn someone because you know deep down that they are not doing anything as such, or yourself, more importantly, that does take courage in a sense. It is yet so obvious, but it does take courage. All right. I'm going to read something on the beauty of nature. The miraculous process of a plant being in the right place at the right time facilitates the process of photosynthesis, whereby sunlight bonds carbon dioxide and water to create sugar. Sugar that is essential. It is the essential fuel that powers organic systems. When humans consume plants, that bond is dissolved once again, dividing sugar into carbon dioxide and water. The carbon dioxide is eliminated via the lungs and the water via perspiration and urination. What is left? The sunlight, which is now within the organism that has consumed it. In essence, we live on sunlight because we have consumed the plant, you see, which through photosynthesis, sunlight has bonded carbon dioxide and water. So in essence, we live on sunlight. Plants absorb the formless energy of light from the sun and store it in their leaves. When we eat those plants, we literally ingest frozen light. We use it, and what remains is still its formless essence, which is light. Look at what the plants are designed for, which we just consume blindly over meals. A system to deliver sunlight into our bodies. Look at this beauty of nature. It goes unmissed, it's totally missed, unnoticed. The plant is not craving for attention and telling us, this is what I have done for you. It is acting according to its nature. And to know that you owe your consciousness to the plants in that sense. and to know that everyone is living on the same light. That is how united we are, including those we don't like. Just see the depth of the illusion. Okay, we'll take questions now if there are any, or anyone wants to share anything, they are welcome to. Yes, Sati.
Hello, Gautam.
Hello.
Yeah. Gautam, glad to meet you again today, being my birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, Gautam. Want to seek your blessings. And Gautam, I had one question in my mind, which I thought it would help others also who have similar questions, because many of my friends keep asking me this question. If you could help us understand the karma siddhanta. I understand there are three types of karma. One is the sancheta karma, the other one is aprarabdha karma, and the third one being agami karma. Sancheta karma, which happens to be an accumulation of all your karmas of your previous births. Prarabdha karma is the karma which you are destined to exhaust in this particular birth. And agami karma, any additional karma created is what my understanding is. But having said that, when we are not the doer of our actions, and none of the actions which we perform, the most insignificant ones also, when they are not done by us in the real sense, how does this karma get accumulated? And in this birth, when none of our actions are all ours, how is the agami karma getting generated? If you can just give more clarity on this, Gautam, that would be great.
Aki, to keep it brief.
Yeah.
The prarabdha karma cannot be escaped. That even Ramana Maharshi has said.
Okay.
But with awakening and with the full knowledge and living experience of non-doership, it is the end of the cycle of karma. So no further karma is being created in that sense, in this birth. This is where the teaching is focused, you see. The end of the cycle of doership and blame and condemnation and judgment and hatred and malice and guilt and shame and pride and envy and jealousy and so on is the end of the cycle of karma, which is based on the concept of rinanubandhan, relationships, the bondage of relationships. Why bondage? Because they have been bound by the sense of doership. So therefore, this teaching focuses on this life, on this birth, and peace of mind in daily living. That is how pragmatic this teaching is. So when this teaching is imbibed and lived, there is no further karma that is generated. Now I'll give you one example which is simple to understand. Let's say someone does something to you which has caused you loss or hurt or whatever. When you accept that this was destined to happen, you may or may not like it, it's a different matter, and you may also act upon it, different matter. When you accept this could have only happened if it was meant to happen, by the force of consciousness, God, put any label you want, the acceptance is what we are looking at. So when you have that acceptance and there's no blame, that is the end of doership. The karma is finished there. You see? So this is what the teaching does. It does not perpetuate this bondage, which is the karmic bondage, which is what the action-reaction loop, which we keep perpetuating in our relationships in this life. So when that gets disengaged, because the drama of doership is now finished, nothing more is perpetuated. Then this life is lived with the total acceptance that I don't know what will come my way tomorrow based on the prarabdha. So whatever comes, comes. Whether I like it or not, I accept it as part of my destiny. But because there is no further involvement and drama, we are not perpetuating the cycle of karma. So it is an important point you have raised, and maybe we can, in fact, go into the theory of karma in the light of Advaita and even touch upon the subject of rebirth as a separate session. But that is why, because you see, the theory of karma can get extremely conceptual, and then we get entangled in its workings and all those things. That is why we distill it into daily living. And the beauty is, you may not know anything about the theory of karma, but yet, with this understanding, the karmic bonds start dissolving. That is the beauty of this teaching. Okay?
Yeah. And Gautam, one more question. I mean, recently there have been some news where one popular celebrity has committed suicide. And there was a lot of blame game happening. And there were people who were judging that personality, saying that, oh, it was such a cowardly act. It was not at all required, and all this stuff. But when we look from a spiritual angle, especially from Ramana Maharshi's perspective, everything, every action is predetermined and predestined as per the Prarabdha Karma. So in that sense, even the act of committing suicide by that particular personality was also predestined, right? I mean, how do we understand that? Because, I hope you got my question.
Absolutely right in that sense. But yet, Aki, yet, the masters would always tell students who came to them, if they were depressed, and even if this question or thought came up, that look, suicide is not the end to your problems. Suicide is dropping away of the physical body. We are made up of five sheets, five bodies. Only the physical is visible. So all your unresolved traumas, sanskaras, vasanas, desires, tendencies still remain when the body drops. And that is why Maharaj would say that this teaching is not concerned with just the physical body, but even the subtle body. We are going to the root. The teaching is going to the root. You see? So in that sense, suicide does not end one's troubles, if you could call them troubles. It just appears that it ends because the suffering is so strong that you want it to end. But it also implies an extreme form of doership, because the ego now thinks that I am in charge of my life and I have the power to take my life. So the trust in the source is gone, which was also destined. This is just showing that, of course, it is predestined, but it's also on an acute sense of doership which has got ingrained in the individual concerned, which leads to such a drastic step. So if you read some of Maharaj's books also, I have read in at least two, three locations where he says, please don't consider committing suicide because it does not solve the problem. Now, unfortunately, there are many of us who don't have a guiding light, who don't have a spiritual guide or someone we look up to who can walk us through life's journey. And that is why it is said that if you meet someone who can show you the way, because the journey of life can be a treacherous one, then be open to accepting that there is someone who might know, based on the experience, more than you, someone you can trust, someone you can, whom you know has your deepest interest at heart. Now, some people are not destined to come across that someone and are destined to suffer more than others. You know, something similar had happened maybe 15 years ago. I had never met her. She had taken her life. And her friend called me saying, I can never forgive her for what she did. After all, she has a son. But she didn't ask you for your forgiveness. You don't know what suffering she went through. This is a judgment.
Yeah.
You see, that is what we do. We judge and condemn people, which is the lack of understanding. How do you know what hell the person is going through to pass such a judgment? Nobody has asked your forgiveness. But that is the Maya. Anyway, Aki, I think on your birthday, we should talk of more happy things and celebrate this life, which is a glorious life, you see, because we see everything, the ups and downs, the highs and lows, and everything is passing by and we are learning. And I think...
I tend to ask these questions to you, Gautam, because trust me, I mean, there are many who get benefited by the answers which you give, because I do share your videos with my friends and so on. And in a way, my question answers their inward questions too through this satsang. So that's really helping them a lot.
You know what Ramesh would say, he would tell people when they would ask him that we love your teaching and we'd like to share it with our friends. And he would say, all right, buy some books and give it to them. But he said, even better is give it to your enemies and maybe their lives will change and they will become friends. So have a great day. All the best.
Thank you. Thank you, Gautam. Okay.
I think someone's phone is, unless it's mine, so which could be quite possible when it makes that noise. My brother-in-law is a lawyer, and one day he forgot to switch off his phone and he was arguing a case before the judge. His phone rang. And so the judge got furious and said, whose phone is ringing? And lawyers being lawyers, you see, are very sharp. He realized it was his phone ringing, but he quickly looked back and he said, whose phone is ringing? And he switched his phone off. Okay. Is that Siddhant? Who do we have here? Hello? Okay, let's move to the next one. Yes, Sai.
Hi, Gautam. Good morning. Namaste.
Good morning.
Yeah, I think today's session being a session on Shirdi Sai Baba, I wanted to share some thoughts on this. So I think many a times I mentioned that we need to dig a deep well than many shallow ones. And in my life, I think Shirdi Sai Baba is my deep well. So, we have been fortunate to have his presence in our lives and his blessings throughout from many decades, actually. So we are blessed in that sense. So I just want to check with you on one aspect of his teaching. In Sai Sacharita, chapter 36, Sai Baba says quite emphatically that debt, enmity, and murder have to be atoned for, and there is no escape from them. And this chapter is all about, you know, I think debt in the form of money transactions. People take some vows and not fulfilling them in time, and how Sai Baba would actually remind them of their missed vows and then take dakshina from them to release them from the bondage. So if we draw a parallel from that debt situation into our current day lives, we deal with money, you know, day in and day out, probably every hour or so in our lives. How do we understand this teaching from Baba's perspective? How do we understand this debt component here? I think debt would have probably many meanings, probably maybe karmic debt and things like that. But probably this chapter talks about debt in the form of money transactions and our involvement in them. What would be your thoughts on this teaching of Baba Gautam?
You see, it is, from my understanding, the money is never the problem. It is the association with the money that has to be looked at. And you're absolutely right. In fact, going further, he would even warn his disciples, especially those in government offices, that don't take bribes, because that creates a lot of karma, you see, because if you take bribes, that means basically taking bribes is based on doership. You're taking what is not yours away from someone else through the act of doership. So when you look at money and whatever Sai Baba has said about money, for him, it was an instrument to square off the accounts. It was because, you see, it would be 2 paisa, 5 paisa. He was talking of loose change most of the time. But the action related to the money, the intent and the thought processes around the money, the debt, is what he was pointing to. So that is very important to understand. For example, if one is a devotee of Sai Baba, Now one has to look at what one's relationship is with money. Because let's say you take money which is not yours. In fact, I don't know if you've seen this video called the Gorakh Rule, which is on my channel, which is the one which has appealed to the most people. It is precisely about this. Then that karmic action will have to be reversed because that is based on doership. So, and he would in fact say that the more you give, the more you get. He would emphasize this, that whatever money you have, circulate it, let it flow, let it go out of your hands, use it for the needy, use it for the poor, feed the poor. What is happening? The money is the tool. It is the actions. You see, because it is the me and the mind which wants to hoard the money so that I will survive, I will have a good time. It is all me-centric. And what Sai Baba was doing was breaking the me center by saying, give it away. Trust the universe. Trust life. Let it flow. Let it go out. Because when you're giving it out, when you're giving it to others, it appears that you are giving it to others, but it is giving to yourself. So I don't know if this has answered your question, but you see, money is painted out to be this evil, which it is not. It is a form of energy at the end of the day. It is what attributes have got associated with money, which have to be looked at. This point is tremendously missed. Now, I'll tell you, I've had an experience of a Sai Baba devotee, a Sai Baba Bhakt, and this person really goes into ecstasy when bhajans are sung in the local temple. And, you know, you'll find he's so magnanimous and he'll distribute prasad to everyone. And it's beautiful to see the bhav, right? And this same person at work in a local municipal corporation is a terror. Notorious for taking bribes. Known to be rude, brash, harsh. And in fact, people are scared to go up to him with their problems. Now, what kind of teaching is being lived in this instance? You see, that is so important. So what has happened with the power? What has happened with the money? These things get missed in this bhav, which sometimes can be blinding because it's still centered on me and my devotion to Sai Baba, my love for Sai Baba, or any master for that matter. But then in your daily life, the living God, the living presence, the presence in the other, how you treat the other, that has all gone out of the window. So, once again, it is not the money itself, it is the association with the money. Does that answer your question, or
do you? Yes, Gautam, I think just a point to add to your thoughts here, Gautam. Let's say if I take a practical example in my life that has happened many years now. It's a very mundane stuff, basically, but probably I think throw some more light on that. Many people come and ask for money in times of their need. They need some amount to be given to them with promise that they'll give back at some specific point of time. But that never happens, you know. That never comes back to us. Or we have faced the situation many a times in our lives. That never comes back to us. So should I deem it to be that I was indebted to them formally, that I have paid them some money and that will not come back to me currently? How should we deal with the situation? Because as I'm a person, I won't go and chase them to ask for money.
Yes.
So it is being given to them, so I'll never do that myself.
In fact, you are quite like me in that sense. If someone asks me for money, I give it with the knowledge that it will only come back if it's destined to. You see? So I've already written it off in that sense. In the sense that the mind is free of this burden associated with the money. Will I get my money back? What if I don't get my money back? Do I trust this person? Do I not trust? That is all fine as the mechanics of the working mind. If someone asks you for money, you first think, do I have this much to give? Can I afford to give it without having sleepless nights? And you weigh all the pros and cons. Once it goes out of your hands, you consider you have not given it to an individual, but to an aspect of God, consciousness, the source. So it, you now know it will only come back if it is destined to come back. You might even, if you have set terms that pay me back in 6 months and you sign an agreement and the agreement is not honored, but deep down, with this understanding and with this sense of doership now evaporating because you don't blame anyone, you see the divine in all, deep down you will be at peace because your relationship with money is at peace, with understanding is at peace, and you are at peace with your nature because your nature is one where people ask for money. You didn't make yourself that way. God made you that way. So you even accept my nature is to give. It may be that my nature is to be taken advantage of. That is one's nature. So you are comfortable in your skin. So what is one's nature? What is one's inherent feelings, nature? That is honor. So it may still now someone may ask you for money tomorrow. And you may feel I want to give. You go through this whole process, but now you know, you rest in the knowing that if it is meant to come back, it will. And if it's not meant to, it won't. So be it.
Because this debt can be a pretty much a cyclical loop in all aspects. I was just always been wondering that how this will work out eventually.
Because that is usually when one takes another's money, not when one gives another money.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, Pooja.
Hello, Gautamji.
Hello.
I have no questions today, but I would like to share my experience, actually. First of all, I would like to thank you very much because you have transformed my life. Like, you know, like last year, I have started listening to your talks and I have been a devotee of Sai Baba since I was a kid. I was a child. My father is a devotee of Sai Baba. But my understanding towards Sai Baba was totally different until I have seen your videos and talks on Sai Baba. Last year, when I was wondering, I was reading Satcharitra and I was wondering, Baba, I had a question in my mind to Baba saying, okay, Baba, I'm reading your lessons and everything, but I don't understand few things. So can you guide me on this? And right after that, like a couple of days, I have seen your talks and I was amazed, you know, like after listening to your talks, I have surrendered completely to Baba and that's it. From there, from then, my life has changed tremendously. I would say, actually, I'm seriously, I'm not able to share it in words, actually, because, you know, I was facing, I basically live in Toronto, Canada. I came here as a student and I was facing a lot of struggles though because there was so many things that was happening in my life, like settling down as a permanent resident or whatever, right? So, like everything has changed now. Within an year, I would say there is a lot of change in my life, and I owe that to you actually because you have changed my understanding towards Baba. I stopped asking Baba anything now. Like I don't ask Baba anything. I just say whatever happens, it's because of your will, and I accept everything.
That is the best. Yeah. You said it.
With understanding,
one stops asking.
Exactly. My father was telling this to me, but I have never, understood this teaching. But when I heard your talk, I have completely surrendered to Baba, and now I am experiencing a lot of peace in my life, and you know, a lot of changes has happened in my life. I am very thankful to you, Gautamji. Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Sasan.
Hello, sir. Very good morning to you, sir. So, sir, I really want to thank you for, I want to thank God for sending you as a blessing. So, it's not been a long time since I have been listening to you, sir. But ever since I have started listening to you, a major load has been shadow from my shoulders, sir. I would like to share a funny story of mine with you. So, sir, I have been very serious in my life, whether it was my career, whether it was anything, any pattern of my life, any part of my life, I was a very serious kid. And then somehow I entered this spiritual realm, and here too I became very serious. I was so much serious. Whenever I used to listen anything new, any Swamiji I used to listen, I took it very seriously. And then I read a book, I won't name the book, but in that book it was said that if you meditate for so many hours, you are going to get enlightenment. And I took that very seriously, and I made a schedule. I did my calculations. So I made a calculation that up to age of 45, I will be enlightened.
Wow.
So I took that very seriously. Now, what happened was that I also used to go to my work and all. And there were days when I couldn't meditate. And on those days, I used to be so much frustrated that when I used to go to work, I used to, you know, tell my colleagues, hey, don't mess with me. I haven't meditated today. So this was the kind of stupidity that I was doing, sir. But you have made me realize that, hey, there is nothing to be done. Stop taking responsibility for everything. You don't have anything that is under your control. Now, sir, realization is coming that even if I am doing the meditation, it is not that I am doing the meditation. Meditation is happening.
Correct.
And even on the days when meditation is not happening, it is not me who is not meditating. Meditation is not happening, so let it be. So this has really made my life so easy, sir. And now there is no burden. If it is supposed to happen, it will happen. And in one of your lectures, you said that let the teaching do its work.
Yes.
And this has really opened something inside me, sir. I don't know what it is, but a sense of relaxation has come that nothing is to be done. Let everything happen as it is supposed to happen. And there is no point of complaining. So I really want to thank you, sir. Thank you so much, sir, for being here, for sharing your teaching with us. I really want to thank you, sir. Thank you so much, sir.
But Ehsan, one very important point is meditation may not be happening as a practice, but that does not mean meditation is not happening during the day. That is the gift of the teaching.
Yes.
The result is the relaxation, the lightness, the burden being removed from the shoulders is the teaching in operation. So meditation is happening because the teaching is being lived.
Yeah.
So it is happening. Meditation is happening. Meditation is happening.
Yes, sir.
Not as a practice. Not as a doing by an individual. And that is this treasure which the teaching offers before everyone.
Because before, sir, it was 1 hour of meditation and rest of the frustration. But now, even if the meditation has not happened, like, you know, traditional way, then also nothing bothers me, sir. Like, the sense of relaxation is there, sir.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Yes, Siddhant. Hello.
Hello.
I can't hear you clearly. Not really, no. It's not audible. Do you have a mic or are you near the microphone or something? I can hear you very faintly, so I think we'll have to might have to test your sound and come back. Yeah? Okay. Yes, Sunita.
Namaste, Gautam ji.
Namaste, namaste.
Very happy Sunday morning to you.
You too.
And all of us here. I have a question on Shirdi Sai Baba's teaching. Basically, it's a, I understand, but I just need a reassurance from you, because you, I've been listening to all the podcasts and living the teachings on YouTube with Sai Devotee Speaks. So my question is that, I've been a follower of Baba since my childhood, and it's in a very Sadhguru and disciple kind of a relationship, or follower kind of a relationship, I can say. But of late, from past 2 years, there are some other teachings that are coming on my way. For example, last year, I haven't seeked or searched going into that teaching, Bade Mandir's Guruji from Haryana, that teaching of that satsangs came on my way. I had gone there and I had a nice experience, but somehow when I came back home, I had a feeling that, I used to read the Satcharita regularly, and I got this phrase in Satcharita, one thing Baba says to one disciple, that no matter what, stick on to your guru, hold on to the bolster, very tightly. So I was thinking, is it wrong that I'm going, it's not wrong, I would say, is it right that I'm going to another guru? Is this, that's why I got this message, or I didn't go in search of it, it came to me, The second thing it happened is this teachings of Nisargadatta Maharaj and Ramechi, I've never heard about them before. And only because of Sai Baba Devotee Speaks, I went to your teachings and, to your website. And then I came to know, I made the research. Now, following those teachings in Baba's pathway, I feel empty. I feel nice. I feel peaceful. And I feel happy. But still, Nisargadatta Maharaj is another guru. So is it okay that am I doing the correct thing, that I'm picking experts from Nisargadatta Maharaj, I'm picking experts from, the Guruji or any other teaching for that matter, Ramana Maharishi or whatever, So is it okay that I'm putting on my path and considering Baba as my Sadguru and following him? Can you please help me?
This is a very important question, and thank you for asking. And Divya and Sangeeta, please make a note of this. Maybe we can keep it as a separate short clip, edit it and put it up. You see, the main thing is, are these other teachings reaffirming the message of the Sadguru? In your case, Sai Baba. If you feel, my God, yeah, this is resonating with me, because what I have learned being a devotee of Sai Baba and imbibing his teachings, it reaffirms it. It's thrown a light through another perspective and in fact made my faith even stronger. Then it is beautiful, because these are just different ways of expression. Different teachers, different masters have their own ways of expressing the one reality. So this is the first point to consider, that I have understood my own Sadguru's teachings even deeper now, based on what I have heard, what has come my way, as you said, there's a natural process. That is one. Two is that, have I heard something from another guru or experienced something which is quite apart from what I have in terms of my relationship with Sai Baba now? Am I drawn to something else which is taking me away? Now, this only you will know deep down if this is happening. Now, I will give you my own example. My journey, as I kept saying, has been one where I have met many masters, many yogis, many gurus, and I've enjoyed their company. I know some of them intimately, but I always found that whatever I picked up from their teachings was reaffirming my understanding and my guru's teaching. But there were such fresh perspectives. But it always came back to peace of mind and daily living. Otherwise, it was just an experience. I've met many yogis where I saw fantastic things happening. But deep down, I was clear for myself, that is, that peace of mind is for me the highest teaching. So So whatever pointed back to that was embraced, no matter who the teacher was. But the other things, like let's say experiences happening, were fine for the fun of it. But then I always found I'm drawn back to peace of mind in daily living and to my teacher's teaching. So you see, this guilt which arises is actually a misplaced guilt, because the guilt is I'm doing something wrong by not honoring my guru's teaching. You see, as far as the guru is concerned, the guru knows that it is your destiny. No guru is a true guru who will not allow his disciples to go elsewhere. They are just pointing out that going elsewhere can lead to further confusion. Therefore, stay focused on one message. So you will know that when I imbibe Ramana Maharshi's teaching or Guruji's teaching or this one, it just constantly reaffirms my understanding and my life's journey and my processes. It's so beautiful because you are open, because they are echoing your guru's, your master's teaching. But when you feel that, no, I have got something here which is so tangible, which I never got, then you have to explore that teaching more deeply. That is why Rameshji would say that, you know, you can have one guru today and another guru tomorrow. One leads to another. Even the Buddha had powerhouses as gurus, but his guru said, you've superseded us and your journey is now beyond us also. So it's not that Buddha had one guru. He had other gurus. So gurus are like milestones. It is for you to decide and understand without a judgment, which is making one feel guilty, that is all this a reaffirmation of my relationship with my guru and his teaching? Or am I exploring pastures where new things have opened up, which are giving me tremendous insights and peace, but are not the same as what I have learned under my master's teachings? So there's no question of guilt, you see, because the guilt is the me that thinks it is doing something. It is the play of consciousness unfolding, putting out a platter before you, and your destiny will take you where it is meant to take
you. I had one more question, Gautam. When we say about Baba's will, so for a goal-oriented person like me, you know, I have a lot of goals in my life that I have to do this, I have to do this. When I've started accepting, you know, that everything happens, and I've not accepting, I'm experiencing that nothing is under my control, everything is in God's control, then slowly my goals, you know, I've started thinking, you know, anyways, whatever is to happen will happen. So should I have any goals? Will I be able to achieve it, or is it okay? So is this a wrong way of thinking, or maybe I should work towards my goal and leave the rest to God, as you say? How does this work?
No. So if it is your natural inclination and nature to make goals, that has to be honored. Now what has happened is that the understanding has come that whether the goal is reached or not is God's will. That is the difference. Some people are driven to have targets, make goals. So they have to honor what arises naturally. Now what happens, life has shown you that, you know, no matter how many goals you set, some you reach, some you don't reach. That is God's will. So that acceptance has now come. But if the way one operates is to make goals, enjoy making the goals, knowing that whether or not you reach them are not in your hands. In fact, that is why life's journey becomes so simple and so relaxed, as Ehsaan said, because that pressure that it is me who has made this goal and therefore I need to deliver the results, that is gone. You see, now especially people at work or businesses or in professions, they have goals, they have targets. That's the way it functions. There's nothing wrong with that. This teaching does not mean that, oh, you know, now, you know, what's the point? Forget it. It's your nature. Honor your nature the way God has created you. Let the understanding now come in that based on your own experience, some goals were met, some were not met. those that are destined to be met will be met, those that are not will not, and go with the flow like H2O. Life really becomes a flow. Okay?
Yes. Thank you so much. And thanks for the emptiness I feel and the bliss I feel. Thanks a lot.
You see, that emptiness is what is most underrated. Because that emptiness is the most beautiful. It is the lack of content, the lack of objects, material objects, thought objects, any kind of objects. It's the most beautiful space to be. Yes, Kumar.
Namaste, Gautam, sir. First of all, thank you so much for all the guidance and teaching. It's really transforming life. So the question was, I find myself to be very dry and intellectual, and it's very inspiring to see people on the path of Baba or a devotional path having that kind of a bhava and tears of devotion. And I have seen, even trying to embody that trait, I cannot, but still I crave for that trait. So is there a way one can embody devotion on a path of Advaita in a formless aspect?
Well, this is again an important point you raised. Some people's nature is to be devotional and some people's nature is not. And it is the ego which wants to be something that it is not. You see? So that is the first point. Now, this does not mean one is not devotional. You see, because if you accept that all there is consciousness and you see that the hand of the divine is operating through everyone and there is no one to judge or condemn or blame, is there a greater devotion than that? Is there a greater devotion than seeing that everyone is a face of the one source, the one consciousness? Then your devotion is to the one source and the one consciousness. Can there be a greater devotion than that? It may not appear so, because in devotion there are two. There is the devotee and the one the devotee is devoted to. There are two forms. But there is a living devotion when the teaching is being lived. There is no greater devotion than that, because then there is no other as apart from oneself. So it may appear to be intellectual and dry, but it will be intellectual and dry only if it is not being lived, only if it is taken as a theory. So, for example, if you intellectually accept the teaching, but your relationships are in a mess, then the teaching is not being lived. So there is no question of being devoted to the one, formless one. But if you find that this teaching has brought much light and lightness to situations, to your relationships, you see, view people in a different light, which you do, I know, because I remember what you shared once, and your family and your friends and the strangers on the road and what happens to you. That is devotion to what is, devotion to the source, devotion to the formless God. So it is not necessary that one has to be devoted to a form. Some people are inclined that way. They find it easier to relate to a form and sing praises of the form and bow down before the form, garland the form, because that also is a form which represents the one. So these are different paths. And so by all means, if it moves you, feel moved, knowing that this is not my nature, but I am tremendously moved by what I see to the point that tears come. But then you're honoring your nature also. And maybe you try doing all that, be open to it and see if that also happens for you. But knowing that that will happen only if it is meant to happen. So one is now comfortable in one's skin, the way God has made one. Okay? That is why I say being devoted to the teaching. Be devoted to the teaching. That is how life is transformed. Not only your teaching, but even a form, like let's say Shirdi Sai Baba's form, which, or any master's form, which you are devoted to as a form.
It's
but
12 hours.
Form. You see, be devoted to that teaching. That is what Baba used to keep saying. I give people what they want, so that they may want what I truly want to give them. What was that? That is what gets missed. Okay?
Thank you so much. This was very helpful.
Yes, Zara.
Hi, Gautamji. Namaste.
Namaste.
Morning. I think I've... This is the one of the first talks that I'm on, but it's not that I'm not, I'm aware of your channel because I've been a very active participant in the Sai Baba Devotee Speaks channel. So I've got the link from Nikhil and that's how I'm on this stream today. I have actually been on, I've been an ardent devotee of Sai Baba for a long time. I have seen his, the kind of things and the guidances from him that I've received over the years. So it has really helped me transform and become a better human being in a lot of respects. So today I had a very, I had a question. I mean, I know that the thing that I'm wanting to ask is something which is, I think, repetitive in nature, but I thought I should just get your perspectives on it also. So sometimes what happens is when we are on certain crossroads of our life, it's a difficult crossroad, and you, I mean, at least from my perspective, I've always relied a lot on signs and guidances and, you know, messages from the universe, from Baba. And I believe that he does speak, you know, he does show you certain things, and he just makes it, he gives you his guidance in his own particular way in your prayer or maybe through the daily experiences that you have. So there is a particular instance. Now supposing we continuously get a certain direction from him about a particular situation. So if I am in a particular crossroad right now and I don't know what to do, but I have been asked to, I have been given certain guidances or signs by him. But at the same time, I see that it's not really happening as quickly or as, you know, as immediately as I would have wanted it to. So it's taking time. So and in these kind of junctures, what happens is the mind definitely comes into the picture. It starts playing these things and says that, you know, did I read the signs right? Was it correct? Or was it, you know, so, and whenever that happens, I again tend to go back and ask for a reaffirmation, and I get the reaffirmation in various ways. But, you know, there's always this sort of, because sometimes when things don't materialize immediately or when it doesn't happen, then I think the whole concept of saburi and patience also comes into the picture. But I just wanted to get your perspective on how does one, you know, firstly, understand these guidances, and secondly, how does one prepare themselves to be patient and to wait for something to culminate in their lives. So that's what I wanted to ask you today.
You see, Zara, the thing with signs, some people are blessed that they get signs. Some people don't get signs. Those who don't get signs have to live the teaching and accept what happens. Now, the problem with signs is that we feel that the signs are pointing to a certain direction which we want or we don't want. That is not true. Signs are sometimes given to people just to be followed, but you don't know what the outcome will be. So some people have this gift of seeing symbolically things around them and taking them to be signs. But the me is attached to that because the me is invested in an outcome, you see. But the sign, if one is seeing a repeated sign, logic follows that one follows it, otherwise you would not be seeing it. But the problem is you have attached an outcome to the sign, and that is the pitfall. That is the pitfall of signs and experiences and all that. The knowledge has to be there that, let's say in your case, the universe is showing things which are making clear that you have to follow a particular course of action. But the universe is not guaranteeing you the result at the end of that course of action. The universe is showing you a way to follow as per your destiny. Otherwise, you would not have seen those signs.
Yeah.
And this is a very important point because, you know, it has happened to me also. Many people send me these messages on, you know, the universe showed me this big sign and gave me this symbol and that symbol. But then eventually I followed it and I didn't get what I want. That is the problem. Mm. If there is a karmic destiny, if there is a blueprint to be followed, the universe will put signs in your way so that you follow that path to fulfill that destiny. So that is very important to understand. And patience is not something one can do to be more patient, because that is the ego coming in through the back door. What can I do to be patient as a quality? I want to acquire this quality of patience. When you accept that so much of life is not in your control, and you know that no matter how much effort you put in at certain points, you don't get what you want. When you accept that this is my own life's experience, that no matter what I do, what is meant to happen, happens. Sometimes I put in all the effort, I get what I want. Sometimes I put in all the effort, I don't get what I want. What happens is patience starts arising as a natural quality, because you are no longer forcing your will on the universe, because that makes you impatient. I am not getting what I want, so I am impatient. When the understanding starts operating, when one accepts in each and every cell of one being that if it is the master, if it is God's grace that this will happen, it will happen. That leads to patience. It is the me which is impatient, because the me wants an outcome. And now the me wants to be patient and gets impatient if it is not patient. You see, that is how the me operates. Patience arises when you know whatever comes your way will come your way at the destined hour or not, as per a divine plan which is far bigger than your own intellect can fathom. One tends to become more patient. Okay?
Yep. Thank you so much, Gautamji. That was a very great explanation. Thank you so much.
Take care. Okay, I think we will end this for now. There are some more questions, but they'll have to roll on to next Sunday. So you all can ask your questions next Sunday. And we can just sit for a few minutes in silence. And I know a lady wanted to ask a question, but her mic somehow I could not hear. So maybe we can do that next Sunday. If you're available, then I'd be happy to take your question. I will just change the mode so I can see everyone here while we sit for a couple of minutes in silence. In today's news, we heard that one very big Bollywood star who's about 77 years old has tested COVID positive. But what really moved me is one video which I think he has circulated on, I don't know, one social media channel, where the video is, it's a very short one, maybe a minute or two, where the entire video is only about gratitude and thanking the staff of the hospital, where in his long career in life, he has landed up quite often. And it is just a video of thanks and gratitude and calling them God in human form, the doctors and nurses who take care of people.
in this instance, risking their lives. And that was so beautiful to see, because nowhere in this video, I don't know if there are other videos he's released where he's addressed the issue, there was no mention of me and my story about me getting the coronavirus and all that. From start to finish, it was just a video of gratitude. And it's really quite touching when one sees that people in their own way live this understanding. They may or may not be exposed to these teachings specifically. These teachings are really, they're just saying what is life about. But when one lives with this gratitude and one sees gratitude in all these things, then that is the grace which is already operating. It is quite easy to tap into grace, you see. When the me is no longer focused on the me and my story, and my dramas and my troubles, and me being the center of my universe, the doors to gratitude are wide open. And with gratitude comes grace. Jalandharnath did not tell Gorakhnath, "Oh God, you took 12 years to come back." How could you do this to me? He never said that, you see.